has joined. Has joined.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Today we will be studying
has joined
the fifth Aliyah. We're going to start with the L'shem Yichud. L'shem Yichud, Kud Shabu Yichud, Ishkinte, Did Hilu, Urshimu, Uthilu, Uthilu, Urshimu. Liakta, L'shem, Yudhe, Bavate, the Yichud Ashelim B'shem Ko Yisrael, Limud Torah Mitzvah, La Sok Torah Mitzvah, Vayhino Amadunai Elohino, Elena Maseya, Deno Konene, Elena Maseya, Deno Konenehu. The fifth Aliyah consists of only six verses. They come from Genesis chapter 39, verses 1 to 6. Verse 1. Yosef hu rabad Mitzrayma vayiknehu Potifar saris Paro sar hatavachim ish mitri miad haish me'elim asher horiduhu shama. Now the word Mitzrayma is an interesting word. Translation is that it referring to the Mitzrayim, which is the Egyptians. The hey at the end of the word is silent. The hey at the end of the word can mean that it's a female form of the word, but it can also mean that you're going in the direction of the Mitzrayim of the Egyptian. What are the character traits of the Egyptians? We can also parse the word into the last two letters, spell the word ma, which means what. But it has a gematria of 45, which connects to the Zeranpin level of Hashem's name when spelled out in a certain way. Ma, the 45, also connects to the name of Adam, representing man and women when they were created together, back to back. And the other four letters, Mitzray, or Mem Tzadi Resh Yud, you have the Shorish Mem Tzadi Resh, Metzar, which means narrow. And then you have the Yud at the end of that word becomes my narrowness. So the word Mitzrayma can be translated as what is my narrowness? And it's a question we should ask ourselves. What is our narrowness? What is our limitation? What keeps us from connecting to Hashem? What keeps us from doing a particular mitzvah? All of this is built into this one word, and all of this is built into this first verse, though we yet to know what the full translation is. But these are the questions we need to ask ourselves in order to improve our characteristics, our character traits, our midot. Verse 2. Vayehi Adonai Yohe Wahe Adanu Yo Yoahe Dawanu Heyo Et Yosef Vayehi Ish Mitzlia Matzlia Vayehi Vivet Adonav Hamitzri Vayar Adonav Ki Adonai Yohewahe Adanu Yo Yohahe Dawanu Heyo Ito We call Asher Hu Ose Adonai Yohewahe Adanu Yo Yohahe Dawanu Heyo Matlia Biado Vayim sa Yosef ein be'enav Vaysharet oto Vayachkidehu al beto V'kol yeshlo Natan biyado Vayihimeaz ifkid oto beveto We all call Asher Yeshlo Vayvarech Adonai Yohewahe Adanu Yo Yohahe Dawanu Heyo Et Beit Hamitri Biglal Yosef Vayehi Birkat Adonai Yohewahe Adanu Yo Yo aheda wanu heyo, bekol asher yeshlo, babaitu vasade, vaya azo, kol asher lo, beyad Yosef vilo yada, ito meuma. Kim halechem asher hu okel vayehi Yosef yefei toar vifei mare. That is the completion of the six verses of the fifth Aliyah. Let's look at the English translation. Verse 1. Now Joseph had been brought down to Egypt, So we see that it's Mitzrayma that we discussed during the Hebrew reading is being translated as to Egypt, going in the direction of Egypt. And Potiphar, Pharaoh's chamberlain, the chief of the slaughterers, an Egyptian man, purchased him from the Ishmaelites who had brought him down there. Now, why do we know that Potiphar is a chief of the slaughterers? We know in Judaism and also in Muslim, the slaughtering, the shechting of meat is important. But do we know that that's true in Egypt, especially at the time? Was there a ritual to the slaughter of meat? Or does chief of the slaughterers mean that he murdered people, that he was the executioner? What is he doing? Verse 2. I'm giving some background noise, so I appreciate if you mute your phone by pressing star 6. The Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man, and he was in the house of his Egyptian master. Now, Joseph is a slave. What does successful imply when you're a slave? The Midrash says that Joseph was essentially, Potiphar looked upon Joseph and his wealth improved. And as he elevated Joseph from one job to another, he always did it well. And Potiphar's wealth improved. And he saw that he was an honest man. And so he elevated him even more until finally he was in charge of all of Potiphar's house. Is that the meaning of successful? Another Midrash says, once he was elevated in charge of the house, but even while he was going through the process of being recognized as a godly man, that when he was given his own time, he reviewed the Torah that his father had discussed with him, that his father had taught him. And we know that Jacob taught each of his sons, and they were expected to study Torah. But this is before the Torah was given. So what Torah did they study? They studied the Torah of Genesis, of the first chapters of creation. They studied the Torah that led up to the flood. They studied through the Tower of Babel. That is the Torah that they studied. It didn't have to be written down. It was told from one father to a son, from one person to another. These were stories that were told that were eventually written down in the Torah. They were written down when Moses went up to Sinai, but they were knowledgeable. People knew about them before that. Verse 3. And his master saw that Hashem was with him. And whatever Joseph did, Hashem made prosper in his hand. Now, is verse 3 chronologically before verse 2? Was he successful before Potiphar noticed that he was successful? That he, whatever he did, prospered? Verse 4. And Joseph found favor in his eyes, and Joseph served him. And Potiphar appointed him over his house, and all he had he gave into his hand. Now it came to pass that since he had appointed him over his house, and over all that he had, Hashem blessed the house of the Egyptian for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of Hashem was in all that he had, in the house and in the field. Now, these words seem to be very understandable, but it's also a question. Joseph is blessed by Hashem, and Hashem is blessing Potiphar's wealth because of Joseph. But this can all be said in less letters, in less words. And we have a tradition that says there's no additional letter or word in the Torah. So what is the spiritual work what is the spiritual truth that we need to understand for why Hashem added these words and letters? And I don't really have an answer to that question. It's something we need to consider by looking at the Hebrew letters and permutating them to understand the secrets of why these words and what spiritual lesson they are teaching us. Verse 6. So he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew nothing about what was with him except the bread that he ate. And Joseph had handsome features and a beautiful complexion. Does this feel like the story is complete? Why would the sages have these six verses as a complete aliyah? We know the number six is connecting to Zeranpin, separated from Malchut. And we know that Joseph ultimately becomes the chariot, the Yesod, which is the component, the lowest level of Zeranpin. And Yesod has a connection to Malchut. So we can understand why it's six verses, but it just doesn't seem complete. Does anybody have any questions? I'm going to continue to read from where we left off yesterday. We went through the first three paragraphs. Maybe it's more. Yeah, it's the fifth paragraph. If you have any questions of where that handout is on the Safaria website, we have a link that is in the Hanukkah section on the Unique Astrological Times, or you can go to safaria.org. And in their search box, type in the word Hanukkah, and it will take you the first link, the first response, takes you to this handout, and we are in the fifth paragraph. Which is titled Shabbat 21b, verses 5 and 6. Tanu Rabbanan mitzvah Hanukkah ner Yishuvei to the ham hadrim. Ner le call echad, the echad, the ham hadrim. Mid ham hadrim. Beit Shemai Omrim, Yom Rishon Madlik Shemona, Mikol, Mikan, Ve'elach Poteach Potechet, Ve'cholech, Uvet Chilel Omrim, Yom Rishon Madlik Achat, Mikan ve'elach mosi b'chole amarula paligi batere amorai b'marva rabbi yosef baravin b'rabbi yosef yosef bar zevida hadamar Tama Devet Shammai Keneged Yamim Venik Nasin Betama Devet Hilel Keneged Yamim Hayotzin. The sages taught in a baraita. To understand what is a baraita, we are dealing in times and in generations and where a teacher taught students. The teachers were essentially the 70 sages of the Sanhedrin. If you weren't on the Sanhedrin, why would any student go to you to learn? So each member of the Sanhedrin chose and accepted students. Whether they paid him, whether they didn't, that's not the issue. But whatever lecture was given, there was nothing written down. There was no handouts. There was no mimeograph pages. There was no, parchments were expensive. Each student made the notes for himself of what the teacher said on a particular day. This is the definition of a baraita, the student's notes of a teacher's lecture. Now, if you're taking the notes of your teacher's lectures, you don't write every word down. You write the salient points. You write what's important to you, what you think is important. So they could have a teacher giving a lecture to 10 students. They would have 10 baraitas. They would have 10 sets of notes. But those notes were forbidden. You're not supposed to write down the Torah. So how can we understand that these notes were then utilized to create the Talmud, with first the Mishnah, which comes from the baraitas, and then the Gemara that explains the Mishnah. So you can see and understand why the transmission through all of these groups of people. Remember we spoke about Joshua? Joshua didn't write anything down. And then from Joshua, it went to the judges. The judges, we don't have anything that they wrote down, except the stories in the book of Judges. And then from the judges, it went to the prophets. And from the prophets, it went to the other prophets, and then to the men of the great assembly. The men of the great assembly are the people who wrote the baraitas. So continuing, the sages taught in a baraita, the basic mitzvah of Hanukkah is each day to have a light kindled by a person, the head of the household, for himself and his household. And the mechadrin, those who are meticulous in the performance of mitzvot, kindle a light for each and every one in the household. And the midharin, min hamidharin, who are even more meticulous, adjust the number of lights daily. Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel disagree as to the nature of the adjustment. You have a family. You have a husband, you have a wife, and you have two children. The head of the household lights one candle each night. One candle for himself, one candle for his wife, one candle for the two children, each of the two children individually. And custom has it that as the child is capable of handling open flames and lighting his own candle, he will do so himself. And as custom has it, some communities have their wives do the lighting for them, for the woman herself. And in other communities, there's all these halachot. Oh, but if the husband doesn't get home in time, should the wife light first? And so forth. But essentially, all of this is coming from the notes of a student of a lecture when they were discussing what is Hanukkah. In Exodus chapter 2, verse 20, Ve'ata hatzaveh et b'nei Yisrael v'yichu elecha shemen zayit zakatit la'maor l'ha'alot ber tamid. You shall further instruct the Israelites to bring you clear oil of beaten olives for lighting, for kindling lamps regularly. Why do you think this verse is being inserted into this discussion of Hanukkah? Because we are being told to light candles using olive oil. And that is what I was taught in the Kabbalah Center. You don't light a wax candle like everybody knows about in America. You have an oil candelabra. You have an oil hanukkiah, which is the name of an eight-branched menorah. Last year, I saw being sold in Israel because of the building that I lived in that frowns upon open flames. They forbid it, although they don't enforce it in your own room. But we need to publicize the miracle that took place, whether it was the miracle of a small group defeating a large, well-provisioned army of the Greeks, the ragtag army of the Kohanim with Hashem's help that defeated the Greeks. That's one miracle. And the fact that they found the one jar of oil and it lasted for 8 days, it's another miracle. We need to publicize this. This is the mitzvah. It's not to light the candle. It's to publicize the mitzvot, to publicize the miracles. Where is it best done? It's best done in the middle of the street. After all, after 6 p.m., nobody goes out. They shouldn't go out, but they do. So you can't do it in the middle of the street. So you do it on the sidewalk, so that anybody walking by or driving by will stop and ask questions. and you have the opportunity to tell them the story of the miracle. Or if it's not safe to leave it outside or it's too cold to be outside, you do it in your doorway, where people will see your door is open and there's this strange thing burning, these candles. They'll come and ask you, what are you doing? And you have an opportunity to teach, to express the miracles. This is why we are being told what we need to light with, which is olive oil. And as I started to tell you last year, I saw being sold in Israel with rabbinical certifications called kashrut, candles that were olive oil that had been put wax on top of the olive oil, and the wick went down to the oil. So the wax melts, but the majority of what is burning is the oil, and it's designed to last a half hour. And that is what I did last year, and I'm doing it again this year. They're expensive. They're like $30 for the 45 candles that you light during Hanukkah. But the light that burns is extremely bright. And when you're watching this light, it's a different effect when you burn candles of olive oil or you burn candles of wax. That's not to say that it's wrong to burn candles of wax. Each has their own minhag, their own customs. It's all appropriate. It's all kosher. But we strive to beautify each mitzvah that we do. And one of the ways is that the candles be brighter. Does anybody have any questions? I wish you, remind you that we have a class today at 11 a.m. West Coast time, which is the Sefer Yetzirah. We have a deep Zohar class, and we have what will be the Ari discussing Hanukkah for our 7 o'clock class tonight. A bid you Chag Sameach. We remind you our deep Zohar class is starting a half hour early. I hope you'll join us at 4 o'clock, not 4:30 during Hanukkah, except for Shabbat. Shalom Gadol to everyone. Have a beautiful day.
Shalom Gadol.
Thank you.
Shalom.
Shalom.
Shalom. Thank you.